I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
So by asking the question, tell us what you did this week, what he's doing is saying, are you actually working? And then if you don't answer, like, you're sort of semi-fired or you're fired, because a lot of people are not answering because they don't even exist.
Despite President Trump calling Elon Musk's demands of the federal workforce a pretty ingenious idea, resistance is mounting to Musk's threats, and reporters are disputing the cost-cutting claims of his so-called Department of Government Efficiency. We'll speak with a federal worker with the Department of Veterans Affairs, where more than 1,000 nurses, doctors, and other workers have already been cut. And with Stephen Engelberg, editor-in-chief of ProPublica, who writes, the Trump administration keeps citing an untrue stat as it targets federal workers. Then as Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth heads to Guantanamo amidst growing concern over sending migrants there, we'll look at the private company running its detention center there, which has a history of abuse.
Last year, the Biden administration gave a $163.4 million contract to Acoma Infrastructure Protection, a private contractor, to run the Guantanamo Migrant Detention Center. And what I discovered is that this company has also been criticized for its treatment of migrants at the other immigration jails that it runs throughout the country.
Finally, the nonprofit Dawn is filing a complaint with the International Criminal Court.
Joe Biden, Anthony Blinken, and Lloyd Austin are complicit in Israel's crimes. These officials were aware of the crimes that Israel was committing, and yet they ensured that American political support kept coming.
We'll speak to Dawn board member and veteran war crimes prosecutor Reed Brody. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The United States broke from its European allies Monday, voting against United Nations resolutions calling for Russia to be held accountable on the third anniversary of its invasion of Ukraine. At the UN General Assembly, the Trump administration's envoys voted against a resolution calling for de-escalation in Ukraine and a comprehensive, just and lasting peace. Separately, the UN Security Council adopted a U.S.-drafted resolution Monday titled The Path to Peace that does not blame Russia for invading Ukraine. UN Undersecretary General Rosemary DiCarlo spoke to the council ahead of Monday's vote.
3 years ago today, the world watched in shock as the Russian Federation launched its full-scale invasion of Ukraine, a clear violation of the UN Charter and international law. This act undermined the very foundations of the international order.
President Trump welcomed French President Emmanuel Macron to the White House Monday for talks on Ukraine, NATO, and trade. After the talks, Macron said Ukraine must be at the table for any negotiations over its future, that any peace agreement should allow for Ukrainian sovereignty, and that peace, quote, must not mean a surrender of Ukraine, unquote. Health officials in Gaza say at least 3 children froze to death overnight as hundreds of thousands of Palestinians are forced to live in tents and other makeshift shelters in the freezing cold. Palestinians say Israel continues to violate part of the ceasefire agreement requiring it to supply Gaza with mobile homes and safer shelters. On Monday, the man who's poised to become Germany's next chancellor, Friedrich Merz, said he hoped to soon welcome Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to Germany, despite an arrest warrant issued against him by the International Criminal Court. His offer came as the U.S.-based nonprofit Dawn, Democracy for the Arab World Now, formally asked the ICC to investigate former Secretary of State Antony Blinken, former Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin, and former President Joe Biden for possible complicity in war crimes and crimes against humanity. The request cites the $17.9 billion worth of U.S. weapons transfers to Israel under the Biden administration. We'll have more on the ICC complaint later in the broadcast with Reed Brody, Dawn board member and veteran war crimes prosecutor. Syria's de facto leader has opened a two-day national dialogue conference on Syria's political future. About 4,000 people are attending the talks in Damascus, led by Ahmed al-Shara, Syria's transitional president and head of the rebel coalition that toppled longtime dictator Bashar al-Assad. On Monday, al-Shara pledged to work toward the establishment of a civilian state with a separation of powers and the rule of law. He also said the state would hold a monopoly on weapons. Al-Shara did not invite the Kurdish-led Syrian Democratic Forces, which controls large parts of northeastern Syria. The SDF is backed by the United States, but opposed by Turkey. Meanwhile, Syrians have taken to the streets to protest Israel's announcement ordering the interim government to completely demilitarize several southern Syrian provinces. The protests erupted after Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said his forces would indefinitely hold Syrian territory it's occupied since Assad's fall in December. The Trump administration's revoking a policy that requires reporting when U.S.-supplied weapons are used in violation of international human rights law. The measure was imposed during Biden's tenure in response to pressure over U.S. arms supplies to Israel. Senator Bernie Sanders said Monday he'll move to block the sale of $8.5 billion in U.S. weapons to Israel. Sanders, who also fought against U.S. arms supply to Israel under President Biden, said, quote, "It would be unconscionable to provide more of the bombs and weapons Israel's used to kill so many civilians and make life unlivable in Gaza," the senator said. In Denmark, about 20 activists were arrested at the Maersk shipping company's Copenhagen headquarters Monday as they protested its role in fueling Israel's weapons supply. Among those protesting and arrested was the prominent Swedish activist Greta Thunberg.
We're currently outside Maersk, one of the biggest shipping companies in the world, that only the last year, has shipped thousands of tons of military equipment to Israel to arm them during their genocide in Gaza. And we are here to demand that Maersk must stop all the transportation of weapons and weapon components to Israel. They must terminate all contracts and investment that support the genocide and occupation of Palestine.
U.S. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth welcomed Saudi Prince Khalid bin Salman to the Pentagon Monday, pledging closer ties between the U.S. and Saudi Arabia.
We're going to pursue peace through strength and put America first. But that does not mean ignoring partnerships. And in fact, it requires greater attention to the ones that matter the most. And our partnership with Saudi Arabia matters a great deal.
Prince Khalid bin Salman's warm welcome at the Pentagon comes just days after President Trump flew to Miami to attend an investors conference hosted by Saudi Arabia's Sovereign Wealth Fund, which has a $2 billion stake in a business run by Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, and which backs the LIV Golf League that holds its tournaments at Trump's properties. An independent federal oversight agency has declared efforts by Elon Musk's Doge operation to fire thousands of probationary employees to be unlawful, paving the way for them to be rehired. Hampton Dellinger, who leads the Office of Special Counsel, said he would ask the Merit Systems Protection Board to pause the firings for 45 days. Earlier this month, Trump fired Dellinger, but a federal court reversed his termination and the U.S. Supreme Court declined to overturn his reinstatement. On Monday, the Department of Veterans Affairs said it had fired another 1,400 workers after about 1,000 other workers were fired from the VA earlier this month. Meanwhile, The Washington Post reports the Trump administration plans to slash the Department of Housing and Urban Development in half from about 8,300 workers to just over 4,000. Current and former employees said the cuts are likely to upend housing markets, make homes less affordable, and roil mortgage transactions. On Monday, TV screens throughout HUD's headquarters were apparently hacked to show a looped video, clearly AI-generated, portraying President Trump kissing the feet of Elon Musk. The video was labeled, "Long Live the Real King." U.S. postal workers were joined by union leaders and fellow workers Monday as they rallied against Trump's reported plan to place the historically independent postal service under control of the Secretary of Commerce. Workers and customers warned the move could be the first step in privatizing the U.S. Postal Service, among other things that could lead to addresses in more remote rural areas not being serviced. But any major changes to the USPS would legally require congressional approval. This is Brad Renfro, president of the National Association of Letter Carriers. Union.
This administration has no interest in protecting public service, working people, or really the public good. They want to throw us away and create an unreliable, inefficient, expensive private delivery service. And what do we say to that?
The Trump administration's halted efforts to jail immigrants in tent camps at Guantanamo Bay over concerns the makeshift facilities don't meet basic detention standards. Trump officials had planned to build the tent structures to detain an anticipated 30,000 immigrants apprehended at the U.S.-Mexico border. This comes as Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth is traveling to Guantanamo today, his first visit to Guantanamo since his confirmation. Hegseth was previously based in Guantanamo, where he served as an Army National Guard. We'll have more on Guantanamo later in the broadcast. In more immigration news, the Trump administration's directed ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, to track down and deport hundreds of thousands of immigrant children who came to the U.S. without their parents. When children migrate to the U.S. alone, they're usually placed in the custody of Health and Human Services and the Office of Refugees Resettlement, which are both now overseen by Robert F. Kennedy Jr., raising concerns from advocates of further abuse and rights violations. Here in New York, Mayor Eric Adams on Monday announced the city would be shutting down the Roosevelt Hotel shelter for asylum seekers. The sites house some 173,000 immigrants since it opened in May of 2023, in response to the thousands of asylum seekers who were bused to New York City from the southern border.
We are announcing that the Roosevelt Hotel, which has served as both our asylum arrival center and a humanitarian emergency response and relief center for nearly 2 years, will be closing in the coming months.
The hotel's closure comes as Mayor Adams has promised to shutter dozens of other emergency migrant shelters by June. Adams has been accused of accepting a deal, a quid pro quo, to help enforce Trump's mass deportation policies in return for the Department of Justice suspending corruption charges against him. On Friday, a New York judge rejected calls from the Department of Justice to immediately close Adams' case, but ordered the trial to be delayed indefinitely. Adams on Monday shrugged off mounting demands for New York Governor Kathy Hochul to remove him from office, which Hochul said last week she would not do.
No, I wasn't concerned about being removed because I knew I did nothing wrong.
Farm worker and environmental groups are suing the Trump administration over its removal of climate change-related information on the USDA's website. The lawsuit accuses the USDA of harming farmers' livelihoods by deliberately withholding crucial information on federal loans, conservation practices, and climate adaptation strategies. Earth Justice, one of the legal groups that filed the lawsuit, says its outcome could have major implications across all federal agencies. Trump's White House removed over 8,000 government web pages since coming to power. And Leila Swaif, the mother of jailed Egyptian-British author and activist Ala Abdel Fattah, has been hospitalized in London after nearly 150 days on hunger strike. The 68-year-old human rights activist, mathematician, and mother began her hunger strike as part of a campaign demanding the British government pressure Egypt for the freedom of her son, Ala. He was due to be released from prison last September after 5 years behind bars over unfounded charges of spreading false news. But Egyptian authorities have refused to count more than 2 years Ala spent in pretrial detention toward time served, meaning Ala likely won't be released until 2027. Professor Leila Swaif has lost nearly 70 pounds, consuming nothing but herbal tea, black coffee, and rehydration salts since last September. To see our interviews with Leila Swaif and Ali Abdel Fattah, go to democracynow.org. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now!'s Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
We begin today's show looking at growing resistance to Elon Musk's demands and threats to the federal workforce and how reporters are disputing the cost-cutting claims of a so-called Department of Government Efficiency, or DOGE. On Monday, a federal judge temporarily blocked DOGE from accessing private information at the Office of Personnel Management and Education Department. Also on Monday, a different federal judge said the way DOGE is operating may be unconstitutional since the Appointments Clause of the Constitution requires leaders of federal agencies to be nominated by the president and confirmed by the Senate, and Elon Musk was neither nominated nor confirmed. This all comes after the Trump-appointed heads of key agencies, including FBI Director Kash Patel, Director of National Intelligence Tulsi Gabbard, Secretary of State Marco Rubio, Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth, all told their workers not to comply with the demand Musk made on Saturday to all 2.3 million federal workers. On a social media platform X, Musk wrote, quote, consistent with President Donald Trump's instructions, all federal employees will shortly receive an email requesting to understand what they got done last week. Failure to respond will be taken as a resignation, unquote. In response, the president of the American Federation of Government Employees called Musk unelected and unhinged. Meanwhile, President Trump backed Musk's plan, calling it a, quote, pretty ingenious idea, and said workers who don't answer would be, quote, semi-fired or fired, even as the Office of Personnel Management contradicted him and said responses were voluntary. Elon Musk doubled down on Sunday, writing on X, his social media platform, quote, a large number of good responses have been received already. These are the people who should be considered for promotion, unquote. Critics noted a promotion would then make them probationary, and Musk has directed federal agencies to fire probationary workers. For more, we're joined by two guests. Stephen Engelberg is ProPublica's editor-in-chief, which is as a team of reporters covering Donald Trump's second presidency. And in Philadelphia, we begin with a federal worker at the Department of Veterans Affairs, where the Trump cuts already led to the dismissal of more than 1,000 newly hired workers, including nurses, doctors, and other workers. Letitia is using only her first name for interviews, in part out of fear of reprisal. She's also a member of the American Federation of Government Employees. We welcome you both to Democracy Now! Letitia, let's begin with you. You work at the Department of Veterans Affairs. All 2.3 million federal workers have gotten this message. They have to say what they did this week, and if they don't respond, they will be considered resigned. Except that a number of different agency heads said you shouldn't respond to that email. And yet President Trump says it was an ingenious idea. Can you explain the kind of chaos in the Veterans Affairs Administration right now? How are federal workers feeling and responding?
Good morning, Amy. Thank you so much for having me and for drawing attention to this national fight. I just want to make the disclaimer that things that I share today are my personal views and of my experience, and I am not representing my agency nor my union in any fashion. The email, what did you do last week? It's insulting. It's disrespectful to the work that federal workers do every single day. As you mentioned earlier, it caused mass confusion, also concern for privacy and the security of the very sensitive and confidential information federal workers handle every single day. This is a game to DOGE. This is a game to Elon. He has acknowledged that it is a ruse. And federal workers are learning and understanding that this is all a ruse, right? It's under the guise of efficiency, of accountability. But we know the rude awakening that Elon calls it, or the second dose of reality, which is his real goal, is to gut public services in the federal workforce and pave the way for privatization of public services, goods and programs that we all need and love?
Well, Letitia, the VA is one of the largest agencies in the federal government, about 400,000 employees. What was the communication you got from VA supervisors about, if any, about what you should do in terms of this deadline that Musk imposed?
Yes. So, you know, we were at the time, you know, earlier part of the day before we were then told that we did not have to reply. You know, our union as well as our agency did direct us to comply to the request.
And what has been the morale and the of your fellow employees as you're facing this in contradictory pronouncements and claim announcements of layoffs, rescinding of layoffs? Could you talk about what the impact is on your day to day work?
Sure. So, you know, including myself, as well as my colleagues, you know, this is very distressing for us. It's demoralizing and it's dehumanizing. We know what we do for the federal government, for the American public, truly, every single day. Like, the United States Postal Service ensures that mail gets processed and delivered to every home address in the United States of America. The Consumer Protection Bureau ensures that, you know, these corporations are held accountable and making sure that, you know, everyday working families are not being scammed. It's demoralizing. We know that it's meant to be intimidating, to sow chaos and confusion for the ultimate goal of gutting public services and, you know, paving a way for Elon and his very wealthy, disgustingly wealthy allies to gain more profit. And it's not right. You know, if Elon is successful, this will impact working families everywhere. In fact, it already is, right? With the loss of jobs, with the mass resignations, there will be and has already been perhaps delays in processing of claims at Social Security and Medicare. Delays will come for medical care for veterans. You know, our public lands will not be ready and accessible and safe for the summer and spring seasons. This will continue to have deleterious impacts for many generations to come. And I'm very happy to be a part of a group of informal rank and file workers who are fighting back against these austerity measures.
In addition to Letitia, who is a Veterans Affairs federal worker, we're joined by Stephen Engelberg, who is ProPublica's editor-in-chief, which has a team of reporters covering President Trump. In December, Stephen, you wrote an open letter to Elon Musk in which you suggested his Department of Government Efficiency read the ProPublica reporting on wasteful practices and spending by federal agencies. On Monday, you wrote a piece headlined, "The Trump Administration Keeps Citing an Untrue Stat as It Targets Federal Workers." It begins, "As the administration of President Donald Trump throws one government agency after another into the wood chipper, a startling statistic about federal workers keeps coming up. Only 6% of federal employees are working full-time in their offices. By any post-pandemic standard, it's an astoundingly low number, particularly as major American corporations move to force workers back to the office 5 days a week. It's also completely untrue," unquote. Stephen Engelberg, talk about why you dug into this one false claim among many, what you found, and how it fits into the bigger picture here, why this is so significant.
Good morning, Amy. Well, of course, we are hearing an awful lot of things that are untrue. You know, Ukraine attacked Russia, so on. I mentioned in the piece the, you know, rise and fall of the $50 million in condoms to Gaza. So there are many, many kind of false claims filtering around here. This one caught my eye because it was a bit of a sort of a kerfuffle in early December. A senator from Idaho, Senator Joni Ernst, who's a bit longtime foe of, you know, the federal workforce's purported wasteful practices, put out a report, and it said 6% of federal workers, only 6% of federal workers show up to work Monday through Friday. And the minute that came out, it was on, there was the New York Post, you know, Hannity picked it up, Fox News, Speaker Mike Johnson. So it was everywhere. And, you know, being an investigative type, we at ProPublica do a lot of investigative reporting. I was just curious, where did this come from? And so I went to the report. The report had footnotes, and the footnote took me to something. There was a story done by Federal News Network, operation out of Washington that covers the federal workforce. And they had done a sort of completely unscientific survey saying, you know, write in if you're, you know, want to tell us about your work habits. And so they got a little over 6,000 people writing in. By the time that I got to the website, they had put an editor's note in saying, this is an unscientific survey. Everyone's self-selected. There is no possibility that this is actually accurate. In fact, the OMB has done kind of the definitive survey of this. And first of all, only 50% of federal workers can work remotely at all. So half the workforce goes to work every day, because if you think about it, aircraft carriers and veterans hospitals and so on, I mean, the doctors can't work remotely, the nurses can't work remotely, there are 5,000 sailors on an aircraft carrier, they're not working remotely. So it was obviously wrong. And then of the remaining 50%, they spend about 60% of their time at work. So this statistic was clearly wrong, clearly disproved. And frankly, I didn't think it was much of a story, because, you know, there was, you know, the various, you know, fact-checking websites came out a few days later, picked up the editor's note on the story and said, look, this is just baloney. PolitiFact, you know, said, you know, pants on fire, which is the lowest possible rating for truth of a political statement. But then, lo and behold, when Trump took office, this thing started popping up again. On January 20th, it was in Trump's, you know, fact sheet explaining why they're going to cut the federal workforce. And so I thought that was worth kind of honing in on it and sort of explaining to people. The first, you know, iteration of this, the report, might have been a bit of sloppy research, you know, a misreading of a story and a footnote by somebody writing a report. But the second iteration of it was not. That was done with malice aforethought. And I thought that was worth stopping and telling people. So that's why I did the story.
And Stephen, I wondered if you could talk about the status of DOGE, what exactly it is. One of your articles in ProPublica says, if DOGE is a federal agency, it can't shield its records from the public, which the Trump administration has been doing. But if it's not an agency, then DOGE's tens of millions of dollars in funding weren't legally allocated and should be returned. Some people are contending. Can you talk about this limbo area that DOGE exists in?
I mean, I think the way they're handling it is, you know, despite the public statements about transparency, to limit any transparency, you know, as your viewers no doubt noticed, when they were sort of challenged on this, they began putting up some notion of what they're doing. You know, talk about, tell me five things you did last week. DOGE began reporting some of the things they've done and said, look, we've saved $55 billion. And it turned out it was nowhere near that. So I think this is designed. You know, you'll notice they've gone round and round on who even runs DOGE. I mean, you know, at one point, obviously, the president said, I'm appointing Elon Musk to run this thing. When they began to notice that maybe that might have legal implications, they announced that, no, he's not running it at all. But they won't say who is running it. You know, it walks like a duck. It quacks like a duck. It's a duck. I mean, this is a federal agency. It's wielding arguably the most power than any federal agency has ever wielded. I mean, when other presidents who were, shall we say, skeptical of the federal workforce became president, the Office of Personnel Management, which runs as the HR sort of arm of the government, they were not able to fire thousands upon thousands of workers at a stroke. So I think it's pretty clear, and I think that ultimately this will be concluded, that DOGE is a federal agency, and whoever is running it is the leader of an agency, and that's going to have a lot of implications.
I wanted to go to a video that ProPublica and Documented obtained from a 2023 speech by the now, well, director of the Office of Management and Budget, Russell Vogt, who is considered one of the chief architects of Project 2025. He spoke at a private gathering at the pro-Trump think tank Center for Renewing America. Here, Vogt is describing his goal of defunding federal bureaucracies.
We want the bureaucrats to be traumatically affected. We want, when they wake up in the morning, we want them to not want to go to work because they are so, they are increasingly viewed as the villains. We want their funding to be shut down so that the EPA can't do all of the rules against our energy industry because they have no bandwidth financially to do so. We want to put them in trauma.
So, Stephen Engelberg, talk about the significance of what Russell Vogt, now once again head of OMB, said.
I think it's incredibly important. I mean, it's a funny thing. You know, you do a lot of stories in the run-up to an election, and I remember